Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Elevated Conversations podcast. I'm your host, Colby Jeffers. And on today's episode, we are continuing a bit of a mini series here where I've been inviting on different artists who I've recently collaborated with on music. On today's episode, we bring on Khalil Rokemore, also known by his artist name, Khalil the Goat. And Khalil and I, we released an interfaith collaboration last year in August of 2021 called Life Vein. And the song is basically about our spirit's nearness to God, which was inspired by scripture from both the Quran and the Baha'i writings that give the analogy that God is closer to us as humans than our life vein or our jugular vein, which we thought was a really powerful concept. So yeah, we put it into a song. We wanted to hop on the podcast though and just, yeah, dive deeper into the track and share with you the inspiration behind it and a lot of cool stories. So before we jump into all that, let's listen to the song. This is called Life Vein. Enjoy.
They call me Ramzan.
Shoot for the stars, that's the right aim. I was at the darkest and the light came. Now I'm in the clouds on the bright plane. God close to me like my life aim. Life aim, life aim. God close to me like my life aim. Life aim, life aim. God close to me like my life aim.
Yo, while you're on this earth, that's the time frame. Time. Better figure out your purpose, find the right way. Right. Look at the book, what's the guide say? Mm. Cause this body that I'm in comes and goes. My space. Too much focus on myself, that's an eye strain. Ooh. It was messing up my vision like a migraine. Ooh. F them, F that, that's what pride say. Overcome your lower nature, that's the highway. Burn the veils or you won't see the light rays. Light. Even on a bright day, when my heart stops beating and it's time to enter my grave, my soul continues on the journey, that's why I pray. Shoot for the stars, that's a right aim. I was at my darkest and the light came. Now I'm in the clouds on a bright plane. God close to me like my life ain't. Life, life ain't. Life, life ain't. Life. God close to me like my life ain't. Life ain't. Life, life ain't. Life. God close to me like my life ain't.
God close to me like my jugular. How you gon' believe why not loving us? Please spread the peace cause we struggling. Do a good deed and he double it. It's time to re-lift me up again. Mine and Khalil, I could be your friend. Living life still like it would not end. But really the end is when it begins. God close to me like my jugular. How you gon' believe why not loving us? Please spread the peace cause we struggling. Do a good deed and he double it. Shoot for the stars, that's the right aim. I was at my darkest and the light came. Now I'm in the clouds on the bright plain. God close to me like my life ain't. Life, life ain't. Life, life ain't. Life. God close to me like my life ain't. Life ain't. Life, life ain't. Life. God close to me like my life ain't.
And again, that was Life Vein by Khalil the Goat, featuring myself. And again, that track was released back in August 2021, but we were finally able to sit down and get this podcast recorded. There was a lot we wanted to share about the track. As I said, this is inspired by scripture from both the Quran and the Baha'i writings, which have this, this beautiful analogy, referring to the life vein or the jugular vein, which for those of you that are not kind of familiar with the anatomy, the jugular vein is basically the series of veins that delivers deoxygenated blood from your brain back to your heart. So it's a very important vein in your body. And in the scripture, it talks about how God is closer to us than our life vein, which obviously we know our life vein is very important to, keeping us alive. So yeah, so I wanted to bring on Khalil. Khalil is an amazing person. He's a rapper, poet, he's a comedian, really funny guy. He's also, just super creative in general and also an amazing thinker. Him and I always have just really deep and amazing conversations. And as I mentioned, he's a member of the Muslim community. And we have a really cool story of how we met at an open mic, which I'll save for the podcast. So we just wanted to share all about that. And then, kind of how this song came to be, as well as, of course, just get to know Khalil a little bit better, his background and how he got into music and his, walk in faith and all that good stuff. So, so without further ado, let's jump into the podcast with Khalil the Goat. You're now listening to the Elevated Conversations podcast, brought to you by me, Colby Jeffers. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Elevated Conversations podcast. I am here with Khalil Ijaz Rokemore, a.k.a. Khalil the Goat, a.k.a. Khalil the Human, Khalil the Griot, man of many titles. Welcome, Khalil. So happy to have you on.
Salam alaikum rahmatullah. Peace and blessings of God be with you. I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been wanting to have this podcast for some time, and I'm so happy we finally got around to making it happen. And it's been a while since we released the track. And so I'm excited to kind of re-dive into it and unpack it a little bit and kind of let the listeners know, how much went into this particular track. So we just gave it a listen. The listeners also just were hearing the song as well. So before we jump into everything, just any kind of first quick reflections on re-listening to the track.
I love the ad-libs. It's such a heartwarming, uplifting song. It puts me in a good mood.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, the ad-libs, that's a funny thing you mentioned that. I remember in the studio, ad-libs are always something that I've been a little bit like hesitant or shy about. But I love how you have this really cool blend of you're such a spiritual person, incredibly talented and gifted musically, but then also have this amazing sense of humor. And I feel like you blend it all together. So just a little like, pew, you know, I was like, let me get out of that. And it's just such a little simple thing, but I feel like those are the kind of things that, I don't know, it makes a song.
I can never part of me like becomes like self-aware when I'm like doing art and I'm like, I can't separate me as a human from me as an artist. And it just becomes like ironic, like, you know, there's just the trope in rap of doing gunshot ad libs and sounds. I don't know why it just hits. So then I was like, I'm not really comfortable with that.
Right.
But like, let me do some clever. So like one song, I literally just say gunshot ad lib. I just say gunshot ad lib. I just make like a funny sound, like a very unintimidating gun.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and I love how humor can also be that tool or that mechanism for pointing out things that, you know, in a way that makes it accessible and doesn't shut people down. You know what I mean? Because there are certain things about, you know, culture, any type of culture that need to be critiqued, that need to be improved. So obviously, yeah, within the realm of hip hop, that's definitely a big critique for a lot of people is the violence that can be, perpetuated. So I think, yeah, but you know, how do you then address that? How do you improve? And obviously if you just come right out and criticize that doesn't always really, it's not always productive, but, sometimes it is, but then humor can also be a really great way to just open people's minds. I just wanted to share a kind of a cool story on the track, I'm trying to remember how it came up, but the phrase good deeds came up in conversation with my son Noble, who's, you know, 4 and a half. And we hadn't listened to this track in some time. And he just said, oh yeah. Yeah. Like that song. And I was like, yeah, what do you mean? He's like, yeah, good deeds. We'll double it. And so like that line from your verse really resonated with him. And it's just crazy. Sometimes he'll just remember things literally out of the blue where I'm like, how did that come to your mind right there? I guess that's just, you know, human consciousness, but just to see that it left that imprint on him that, oh, when you do a good deed, God will, you know, double it or will essentially return the favor in higher degree. So yeah, that also just showed me the power of lyrics, man, like that they just hook themselves in your brain and then they can influence you down the line. So even at the, you know, age of 4. So we were just talking about before we hit the record button, we were talking about how humans are sponges, particularly kids. Yeah. Which I think speaks to the importance of providing music that is going to uplift them, educate them and help them, you know, rather than degrade them. So props to you on that dope lyric. It stuck with Noble. We'll definitely circle back around to Noble. Noble has a very important part of our story, in terms of how we met. Before we jump into that though, I always love to kind of orient the listeners with, the guest on the podcast. So, maybe before jumping into the track, Khalil, you could just kind of break down real briefly, a little bit about your background. So what was it like growing up? Where'd you grow up? What was your childhood like? Maybe talk about, you know, how you started creating music. What was that process like? And then obviously, I'm sure everyone knows at this point, you're a very spiritual person. That's, I think, something that really draws us together as friends. So maybe just share a little bit about, you know, what your spiritual experience has been. And then we can dive into more of this this track, Life Vein.
Okay, cool. Who, me? that's Beetlejuice reference. Growing up, I was put into the Boys and Girls Club at a young age because I was, here's a story it kind of like breaks this idea that I'm some spiritual person. So it starts off, I was just a kid, right? And we're playing around and I end up getting into something I wasn't supposed to get into that was left outside. So somebody had left. So like we used to play hide and seek, and I found that there was like a room above a roof, like a whole like clubhouse type. I was like, oh, we found our clubhouse. And I go up there, and the only thing in there is just a big cardboard box full of magazines, dirty magazine. And like, I see this is like my first time seeing this stuff as a kid. It like blew my mind. Then I found my parents found out I got in trouble. And then the consequence of it was to put me in an after school program so that I don't have the time and, you know, like freedom to roam and get into stuff that's bad. So then when I got put into the Boys and Girls Club, I got into stuff like building Legos and technology and playing basketball. And that shifted my mind to like want to be creative and basically develop crafts and like develop my own talents. And then like I brought that into school that same year when I was 8, 9 years old, and they had choir. And I was like the first instance of like music at school. And I thought that was cool, like that you could have a class, even though I was like really into, like I wanted to be a scientist at that age. I was really into science and math. And that was like what I used to do all the time, go to science museums. But even before I went to school, my favorite thing to do was to go to the library and, you know, just read books. But that was all like scientific stuff. So then that's what I thought school was about. And I find they got classes about like music. I was like, that's cool. So I used to be in the choir class. I used to be really into just like music in general, like the little, they had little statues of like Wolfgang Amadeus, Mozart and Beethoven and all these people. Mm. And I used to think it was just so cool. And I started there with choir. And then from choir got into playing the xylophone and the keyboard. And then like just looking at like the layout of the keys that's synonymous with the keyboard and the piano and the xylophone. And then from there learning the musical scale. So I just joined band after that. So I took choir at 8. Then the next year at 9, I joined percussion and band. Did that until I was like 13. Stopped music for basketball and sports to focus on that. And then when I was 15, I started writing raps because I was always like a hip hop head. Mm. I was like a Tupac stan, an Eminem stan. Mm. And then I just like decided to start writing my own raps. And I was really into like lyricism and trying to like be lyrically creative. And I used to write raps like backwards, forwards, palindromes, like all type of like random, like trying to write a rap where the beginning of every line spells out something. Mm. Like that's how I would write. Mm. But I didn't perform them. I would just write them. Mm. And like this whole idea of being a rapper to me was like being an icon. Like you have a personality and you're charismatic and you got flow and all. I had none of that. Mm. I only had the pen. Mm. So like I started at 15, but I wasn't making music until 19. Like we had like a project in college and I was like, I should turn this into a music video. And what was it? It was like a parody of Snapbacks and Tattoos. But it was about going to the health center. Like it was just a promo about telling kids to go to campus health center.
That's awesome.
So that's where it started. But then when I did that, I was like, this is so cringe. Mm. I could never be a rapper. Like my flow is terrible. I broke down and quit while making it. The only reason I finished is because I had to do it to pass the class. I was like, I'll never rap again. I was like, I hope no one like has to hear this. And then after that, like I decided I'm not going to do any rap. I was all into trying to be a comedian and an actor. That's what I was going to ASU for, was film. And then through doing comedy and acting, I got into memes because around like 2013, 2014, 2015, memes became really big and they became like the, you know, like the quintessential form of comedy.
Right.
And like it started out like, you know, political or argument based. And then it became like this medium where people like share stuff they relate to and stuff they find funny. Mm. So I ended up naturally getting into memes and like having like meme groups on like Facebook and like doing stuff like that. And then through me just becoming like a memer and a troll, I ended up doing a parody song of Drake. And like, I just like took his song, took every rhyme he did and rewrote it, keeping the same rhymes, but talking about something entirely different.
Mm.
So his was 10 bands. So he's rapping about how much money he has.
Mm-hmm.
And I changed it to something inappropriate, 10 hand, rapping about some other stuff I don't really want to mention. That's where it started. I just started as a joke. Like, right. I just did it as a joke, try to make people laugh. And then somebody was like, this is cool, but can you make an actual song? And I took so much offense to that, because I spent, before I like, the only reason I got the confidence to get on the mic is because I was funny and I was a beamer and people liked my jokes.
Mm.
But before that, I spent like 4 years writing and like really taking the craft of writing very seriously.
Mm.
So even though I didn't take myself serious as an artist, I took myself serious as a writer.
Mm.
And like when they said that, I got offended. Like, this person doesn't know what I could do. And I started questioning myself, you know, like I'm selling myself short by only doing like parody stuff and, you know, outlandish stuff for attention.
Mm.
So then I made my first song, Fireflower. And then from there, it was like another bet. So it was almost like I got dared into being an artist. Like, well, you can't make a real song. Oh, I made a real song. Then once I made a real song, I was like, you can't make an album.
Mm.
Like, you got a song, but you don't got a mixtape. And then when I had a mixtape, my uncle was like, you got a mixtape, but you don't got a catalog.
Right.
And it was kind of just like peer pressure just kept me going.
Mm.
And then just like my soul speaking to me too, like, you realize these things, like after you make it, like there's two parts of art. There's the product and the process.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the process, you know, it's a whole different thing. The thing doesn't even exist yet. You're just making it and making it as you go and coming up with things and trying to create and move around and utilize whatever you have. Then when it's a product, it's like immortalized and it's solidified.
Mm.
And then like, you could come back to it later in a different mindset than you were while you were making it. And the art, you like react to it differently. It can almost be a stranger sometimes. Like I look at some of the stuff I made and I totally dissociated from it because I'm no longer the person I was when I made it.
Mm.
And then that made me realize this stuff is different than me. Mm. I'm a temporary being that's ever changing because of emotions and circumstances. This is something that's permanent
because
it's been recorded. So then you start to think like these words will not change and they'll be repeated.
Mm.
As in like, it's not even just one song now. Like if people listen to the song 100 times, that's 100 songs, but it's saying the same thing. So then I start to think like, it's really important what I say and it's really important what I say. And like throughout my whole career, I was, what career? Super high five. Throughout my whole like time making art, I wrestled with that. I wrestled with, on one end, trying to entertain and get attention and like appease people, the masses, and also be true to my heart.
Mm.
And I've noticed they never coincided.
Mm.
What I wanted in my heart was never what I saw that society wanted.
Mm.
And what society wanted was never what I wanted in my heart. So it's like, and you could see that like through the music where you could see, you know, one song I'll be totally worldly and one song I'll be totally spiritual. And then like, I'll question myself and stuff like that.
Mm.
And it built up over time until it got to the point where like, I can't wear the mask anymore. Like I can't like keep up this act. You know, I can't keep up an act of something I don't want to do or something I don't support.
Mm.
So I was like, at a certain point, I'm going to have to make this jump.
Mm.
Like Neo in the Matrix, when he had to jump across the building.
Mm.
At a certain point, I'm going to have to free my mind. I'm going to have to let go of doubt and fear and other people's approval. And I'm going to have to be who I am and who I always have been.
Mm.
Otherwise, we'll never get to see who I was because I've been hiding it and or suppressing myself, you know. So that's the goal, and that's tying it to this track. This track, Life Vein, in particular, is the first track where I actually went to a studio where I actually reached out to an artist to make actual cover art, where I'm actually doing an interview, where I actually did something where I feel comfortable. Like if I go in front of God on Judgment Day and he's like, oh, you've been making music, show me a song. This might be the only song he sees. Like, it feels like, you know, I spent so many years making music and this is the most recent song, but it actually feels like the first song. Because this is like the first song I've made where I'm like publicly talking about, you know, my faith and like wearing that as the mask rather than trying to be, you know, a clout chaser, whatever I thought what people would like. Because to me, that was the most vulnerable mask because it wasn't a mask. And that's the thing, like it's easier to get judged while you're wearing a mask. You're like, oh, he's ugly. And you say, oh, that's not even me. But if it's actually you and they reject you, they're rejecting you.
Right.
And that hurts. And everyone like doesn't want to be rejected. And I think that's what leads to a lot of this stuff we're trying to clean up. It's because people who they're basically, I don't want to say people are fake, but they're doing something because they don't feel comfortable doing what they really want to do. And what I really want to do is, you know, make music that is convergent with my spiritual beliefs and the world, everything all in one. Like I want it to be one.
Right. Rather
than like I'm like two people wrestling each other. And I came up with an album like that. It's called Halal Goat. It's all spiritual stuff. But I feel like this song was the song that like transitioned towards that. Because you are the artist who is doing that. So like I have this idea, I want to do this. And God knows that because God is closer to us than our life vein. Because that's what that means. It says, we verily, a'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Allah says, we verily created man and we know what his soul whispers to him. And we are nearer to him than his jugular vein. So it's like what it means if someone like wonders, what does it mean? God's closer to you than your jugular vein. Is he like in here?
Right.
Is he like microscopic and hiding in there?
Right.
The metaphor is that it's like he's saying he knows you more than you know you. He's closer to you than your body. And like whatever you think is close to you, he knows all that. So like he knows that I really don't want to like make songs like what I was making. So then he sends me someone like you who's doing what I want to do. I think that's how God works. Like when you want something, he sends you what you need to get there. And I see your example and I'm like, okay, I could mimic him. I see how he's doing it. I could mimic what he's doing. And also that even if I do it my own unique way, just seeing you do it in your unique way lets me know it's possible to do it in my unique way. So like, I feel like that's this song was pivotal in my growth as an artist and also in me making a change as an artist. That's pretty much my background in music. To sum it up, it comes from going in choir, in the band, then the writing, then the memes, then the getting dared to rap. And then after being dared to rap and becoming a rapper, having a like a self-reflection, like, let me use my words and be impeccable with my words. Like one of the four agreements, let me be impeccable with my word. And that's has led me to this interview, this moment.
Yeah.
So that's
my wow, man. Yeah, no, that's beautiful. There's so this is one of my favorite parts about this process of doing these interviews is I learned so much and it just, you know, activates so many elevated ideas that I want to dive into. I won't be able to dive into all of them, but some of the things that really stuck out, I think just hearing your upbringing, first of all, just that first story, I think that could be unpacked, you know, just the trauma that young men, you know, or boys go through in this society. And how that impacts the way that we, you know, think. But I think in your case, this example of how then kind of this trauma turned into was an impetus to then go on this journey with the Boys and Girls Club, which then that opened up all these doors as far as the sciences and sports. And also I see that in you in terms of this beautiful combination of a love for science, a love for creativity, a love for spirituality and truth, a sense of humor, a desire for excellence, all of that wrapped into this, you know, one being, and hearing how your upbringing kind of, there were these key moments that unlocked, you know, those various gems in you, I think is really, really powerful. And it was just cool to hear that narrative.
All praise to God and all, and praise to my family too. Cause like, think about it, like, so if we go back, like we say like Khalil is all this now, like all those traits now. But if you rewind the story, what I was originally was just a kid trying to play hide and seek.
Right.
And then I stumbled upon some dirty images.
Right.
And got in trouble for that.
Mm-hmm.
And what really shaped my development was the response to my behavior.
Mm.
Instead of me being like punished, like my punishment was like it fixed me.
Right.
Like instead of being like, oh yeah, you shouldn't be into this and it was, let's get him away from finding stuff like this.
Right.
And put him into something positive.
Right.
Like, I think it was, if there's any good about me, it's the result of positive reinforcement.
Mm.
It's the result of guiding me toward, away from my own nature.
Right.
You know? And I think, like you said, it is a lot to unpack. Literally, it was a box, but it's like, it's a lot to unpack because that raises, like, that brings the elephant into the room, or he's already been in the room. It makes him like noticeable.
Right.
The elephant in the room is sexuality and also the innocence of children.
Mm.
That's the ultimate, like, that's what made people like spark, oh, wait, let me pay closer attention to what my kid is doing because he's gotten to this. Mm. And nowadays, like, where is the refuge now?
Right.
Cause I went to that same Boys and Girls Club I grew up at. No kids are up there. Kids are on their phones.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, on the internet exists that box.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And much bigger and much easier to find.
Yep.
And it's like, you know, we have to like address these things. Okay. Like, okay. You as an adult, you like sex and you like enjoying sex and you like the freedom of being an adult and having your own autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
But then what about the people who don't have that autonomy yet, that are still trying to grow and still trying to figure things out?
Mm.
Where, you know, where do we draw the line of like stuff like that? And it started making me think like, it like God puts you in the situation where he forces you to like confront yourself or confront your evils by making it personal. Like a man will be a womanizer until he gets a daughter. Then he gets or until he gets a wife,
right?
Then he gets it,
right?
So it's like God, like, because we're so self-centered, he has to arrange life in this dramatic way where we can finally get it,
right? And
have the opportunity to fight against it.
Yeah, man, and yeah, you're touching on so many amazing topics. Just this, yeah, the interplay of morality and art. And I think this also relates to, yeah, the fact that God is so close to us and God knows all these tests that we're going through and puts things in front of us that are going to give us, you know, opportunities to learn, to grow, hopefully overcome. And if we're not able to overcome it, you know, that test is going to repeat itself because God knows, you know, exactly. And God wants, you know, a particular future for us. He wants us to rise up into our noble, what we're created to do.
Created
and noble. Often we're created noble. Yes, sir. So yeah, we could definitely go on for hours on end, and we have had many amazing conversations like this in the past. And it's one of my favorite things about our friendship, but I definitely want to jump into this track and kind of let the listeners know how it came to be. So maybe from there we can jump into how you and I met. I don't remember what year it was. It was probably Noble would have been 18. A year old. So it was probably like 3.5 years ago.
2018.
Okay. So it's 2018. We both had been invited to an open mic at Arizona State University by our mutual friend, Leslie Carrillo, who invited both of us. I believe she invited you. I know she invited me. I'm not sure if there were. Yeah. Okay. And, And the theme was kind of like social justice. There was a focus on social justice for the immigrant population, but also just social justice in general was kind of the theme. And I performed my song "Education Is Not a Crime." And I remember you performed, I think it was "Backwards USA" was your piece, if I remember correct. Yeah. And it was really special because, I remember, I think I performed earlier on and then stuck around for the rest of the program, and Noble would have been right around a year old. So he was, you know, mobile at that point, walking around, but not super communicative. And, you know, kind of in his own world, as far as like, this is what I want to do, which, as a parent, you know, it's something to navigate where you can't really, it's not based on like reason. It's more based on just kind of guiding them and, you know, providing the environment or whatever. But he was really drawn to that stage, which he always has been. Like whenever I'm up on stage, he just always wants to be with me up there. So I'm always navigating, like, how do I include him in a way that I'm still able to do my thing, but also is empowering to him and doesn't make him feel like, oh, this stage that, you know, my dad performs on blocks me from him or is something with a negative association. So, so after I performed, he wanted to keep getting up there. And I remember you were up there and he just kept wanting to get up to the stage. And I was kind of in this difficult position where I was like, okay, what do I do? Like, I don't want to, you know, have to leave. I want to stick around, but my son is just like, I can't distract him. He's getting angry if I try to take him away from the stage. And, you know, obviously every individual performer is different and can be sensitive to that stuff. And I, you know, obviously I didn't know you at the time, so I didn't want to rub you the wrong way or steal your thunder. Mm-hmm. And I just remember you kind of noticed and you invited him up so lovingly and so welcomingly, and you just really seamlessly and gracefully integrated him into your performance, even to the point, I think, where maybe he said something on the mic or maybe he was just dancing. I'm a little foggy on that aspect of it, but I remember specifically just feeling so assured, like, wow, what a kind soul and what a graceful soul that he's able to just integrate this 1 year old who he doesn't know into his performance. And then it ended up being this thing, I think, that was like a little, you know, a special little moment for obviously for him, for you and the audience, as well. And that was kind of the beginning of our friendship. And then I remember we connected after that, you know, connected on Instagram and kind of kept in touch that way. And I'd always be really inspired by your posts and, you know, you would comment and like on mine. So we were kind of, became friends that way, but I'd love to hear what, from your perspective, how do you remember that first interaction that we had at that open mic?
So I just remember like you said, our friend Leslie Carrillo invited us to pretty much do a song centered around social justice, because she was the leader of the undocumented, I forgot what the actual like title is, but it's for immigrant students,
right?
Club for that. And so I did like those type of songs, and I don't know, it's like from my perspective, I got like pretty angry. Cause like, I was thinking about justice. I was thinking about the songs I made, and my songs, they kind of get rough. Mm. And, right. You know, I say a few cuss words here and there. I say like how racist the world is and how terrible stuff is. And I was like, just so in like aggressive. Mm. And then I was just like, I have none but aggressive songs. Let me add in a heartwarming song. Mm. So I put that one as the end. And it's like a very childlike song. Like the beat is from a song I did when I was a kid, or a game I played when I was a kid, Animal Crossing. Mm. And so like before school, it was like around 7 a.m. So in the Animal Crossing game, the music is based on the time of the day. So there's a song specifically for 7 a.m. And that's the song I use for the beat. Mm. And so it's like a very like inner child type art where I'm saying like, you know, my goals of being a rapper and how I want to be successful and all this, like as a kid dreaming. So like, as I'm doing like the childlike song, the child comes up. Mm. So it was much needed for me, because I felt like I was coming with very aggressive and angry energy. And I feel like the baby kind of like diffused that. Mm. It was almost like that movie trope where you got like the Hulk or like Shrek, and then you have like a vulnerable being coming towards it, and you're like, oh, what's about to happen? Is he gonna get mad? Mm. But then you find out the beast is friendly. Mm. So it was kind of like that. Like it was a scary, not that I'm a beast, but it's just the unknown. Any right. person who you don't know who they are, you don't know what you're entering in that like realm. Mm. So like, It was like he came into the sorcerer's den. He came into the den, and that's really cool that he's fearless like that. Like what adult would do that?
Right.
You know, that is usually the life of the party. Like there'd be some type of people that go up and they usually be drunk out their mind or something.
Right.
You gotta do something to get that inhibition out of your brain. Kids, they don't have that fear. You know? So yeah, he came up and I saw him, and then I hit the chute and I was like, ooh, shit. And he kind of did it a little bit, but he couldn't jump.
Yeah.
So he kind of just moved his arms like that. Yeah. And then he sat down on the stage for the rest of it. And then that was the end. Literally he came up literally as I was ending the song. It couldn't have been more perfectly timed or orchestrated. And then also on my end, I'm also like the baby is the beast. Like I'm somebody's kid is up here. Like what if I got two friends? I picked them up and you're like, oh, don't touch my kids. I'm like, right. What do I do with this kid?
Right.
So dancing was a middle ground where I don't have to touch you. I don't have to, say anything.
Right.
It's a universal language. This baby doesn't know, probably knew a few English words. He knew dances. He knew energy. You know, he knew nonverbal language. So
Wow.
That was a good way to bond.
That's so beautiful, man. Yeah. So that was the origin of how Colby and Khalil met. Noble was the one that helped facilitate the connection. And what a beautiful story and so much to probably unpack there, but we'll save that for another. Oh yeah, please.
And mind you, I got there a little late. So I didn't see you perform. So I didn't see you do art or any of your art until I added you on social media. Then I was like, oh, okay. Then I became a fan after I added you. I didn't know that you did music. I didn't know if you was just someone there or so then when I added you and saw the stuff you were doing, I was like, he's doing what I'm trying to do. Because there's a really good freestyler, probably the best freestyler off the dome when it comes to creative concepts. King Los. He has a song. He said, you can't be a rap god unless you rap for God. And when he said that, I was like, wow. And J. Cole, he got that song False Prophets. Are you trying to get people to worship you? If you think about it, if you're not rapping for God, you're rapping for yourself. And if you're rapping for yourself, you're rapping to build up this icon of yourself that you're this great being. And why would you want to do that? Because you want people to worship you.
Right.
It's not as outright as they're like, oh my God, Drake. But right. They kind of are.
Right.
They kind of are Drake's dropping. Let me stop everything. Kanye's doing it. Kanye did it. You're literally worshiping them. And if you want that as a person, you got to start questioning yourself. What is going on in your soul where you feel like you need people to praise you? That's why I started looking at myself. Why do I need someone to praise me or notice me or look at me? And then that's when you get into religion where Allah is he's the one that wants that. He's the one that deserves that. So then you could do two birds, one stone.
Right.
We go back to what I originally was. I originally was scared to be that icon. So I didn't want to be the icon. I just was doing it as a defense mechanism. Oh, these people are going to judge me. This is all they care about. Let me do this. Originally, my thing was I really care about the pen and the craft of putting words together. So then I got to this point where I realized hip hop is dead. But the art isn't dead. The idea of me trying to become this grand act thing, next big thing, that's dead. But I could still take that sword, that liquid sword, and instead of using it to manipulate myself as greater, I can manipulate it other people greater, God greater. That's actually better. What's better than getting a compliment is making someone else feel worthy. Because I both get compliments.
Right.
You get the compliment of seeing them complimented. And being the Quran says that it's better to be the upper hand than the lower hand. The charity needs to be done. There's poor people, but you would rather be the rich man helping the poor man and the poor man getting help.
Mm.
And a lot of people, we see blessings as getting rather than giving.
Mm.
I got so blessed. He gave me this.
Right.
But in reality, the person who gave you that is more blessed because they're giving. And that goes back to the doing good deeds and doubling up.
Right. Yep. So I was just thinking, man. Yeah. So, okay. Again, so many amazing concepts here. And I think, this idea of, spirituality and confidence and the purpose of music and all these things that we're getting into. Yeah. So important, such a huge topic to unpack. It'd be so awesome to have some sort of conference or symposium on just the purpose of music and
shove it as much as I can in this.
No, it's amazing. Well, and obviously this is what draws us together. So, but let's kind of unpack now. So from us meeting and I didn't know that, that you hadn't seen my music. So that you just, I was just some random dad that was like, hey, let's connect on Instagram. So that's really cool that then that led you down the path of discovering some of my music. And vice versa as well. I remember seeing some of your stuff and just being honestly blown away at your lyricism. I was like, man, this dude is sick on the lyrics and kind of like wanting to collaborate. But that was also something that I was a bit shy on, I think, at the time as well. And then I remember, one day I just decided I was kind of in this zone of trying to, promote my music better. And it's interesting kind of what you're talking about, because I am someone that's really into marketing and promoting and stuff like that. And oftentimes the tools that we have are generally geared towards helping you promote yourself in the sense that, yes, it's to make people worship you. Like so much of marketing for artists is centered in that way. So I'm always navigating that. Like, how do I use this tool to help people find my music, but ultimately ensure that their discovery is not leading them to worship me, but leading them to be inspired to, find God or find a higher power or whatever it may be. So anyway, all that aside, I posted this, video of myself performing one of my tracks called Power. In that verse, there's a small line that says, closer than our life vein, we are always near it, talking about God. And the power, the spiritual power that we can draw upon from God. And you were just really drawn to that particular lyric. I remember you left a comment. We then all of a sudden started messaging back and forth. And I think that was, if I remember correctly, that was probably some of the deepest conversations we had at that point, where we really started getting into spiritual conversations. We were both kind of like, you were sharing stuff from the Quran. I was sharing stuff from the Baha'i writings. We were just kind of like really going deep into various concepts. And then since then, we've continued to kind of just, have this friendship where we can have these conversations and learn from each other. But you I'm trying to remember when you specifically brought up the idea of, or if I did, I'm not sure how the idea of actually creating a song came to be. Can you refresh my memory on that? Like, how did it go from you heard that lyric and then this song idea came to be?
Okay. It's like, okay, I'm searching the DMs in my mind. It all goes back to the Instagram DMs. It goes down in the DMs. You posted the Power track. Was that off of the Wisdom or was that after that?
That was off Wisdom. Yep. That was one of the tracks on there. I didn't have an official music video for it. So I just decided, let me just make a little performance video where I can just, share the song. And that, it was sometime after the album had come out. I was kind of re-getting into okay, how do I use Instagram and these other platforms to, promote new music as well as old music?
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's where it started. You had that line, I commented on it. And then we just started discussing, what does that really mean? Because I was very inquisitive. What is that? I always wonder, what does that mean? Because it kind of gives you the immediate, if it's literal, that he's inside of your veins.
Right.
And then you're like, what does that mean? God is a part of me, or what? And then you start to ask, what does that really mean?
Mm.
And then you came with the Baha'i writings, and they have more expanded commentary on it.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just, just chopping it up when it comes to different spiritual ideas. Just the way I could put it is we're trying to put the pieces of the puzzle together of who God is, what we are, and what we're supposed to be doing. That's what we're always doing. But that's what we're really getting to is who am I? Who made me? Why? What am I supposed to be doing?
Right.
And that, and the whole goal of like making music like this, making a song like this, is trying to align yourself as much as you can with that goal or with that purpose. And that's what it all comes down to, is like, we're just trying to find God. We're just seeking God. We're seeking the face of God. We're seeking God's nature. And when you think of that, you think of like, he's outside of you waiting to be found, like somewhere in the universe or something. But that, a quote like that, where like God says, I'm near, I'm not far, I'm near.
Right.
It brings some comfort to you. Like, I don't know the exact moment, but it might've been you. It might've been you that like decided to take this conversation and turn it into something creative. I feel like that's something that you would have done more likely than me. Like, you're like, I don't know, like we got this cool like idea. What if we made a song about it? Like, right. It was almost like you put the pieces, we're both artists. We both we both have a concept. Why not put it all together and make something out of it? And I was like, yeah, why not think of that? Why not? And then also like, that was around the same time I was deciding I'm going to do the halal goat. I'm going to switch my artistry towards spirituality. And the thing with Islam is there's a difference in opinion whether you could use musical instruments or not. That was the biggest roadblock. I was like, okay, if I'm going to keep making music, I got to figure out how to make music without music. So then I was like, okay, then I'm going to just have to be a poet. And maybe that's what I was always supposed to be, a writer. I was like, music is so much more powerful than writing, though. And it can reach people who don't even understand the language. It could, you know, and it makes the writing more impactful. And I'll be at such a disadvantage of influencing people or, you know, relating my emotions if I don't have music. So then I find there's vocals only music.
Right.
There's music made only with the human body, no instruments. Because the thing was, don't use instruments.
Right.
Nah, don't do music. Because like the Quran is music. The Quran is melodic. The call to prayer is melodic. A lot of stuff is melody and music in nature. The birds are music. But it was just this idea of like a making noise out of a contraption, I guess, was what was the wrong thing. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to take that as an artistic challenge. There has to be a reason God put these in front of me. It can't be to just oppress me.
Right.
It must be that I'm called, like I'm chosen. Because at first I used to think it's oppressive. I would get mad at my own religion. I'm like, man, this is dumb. And I would fight it. Like, there's nothing wrong with music. Then I go and listen to the music. And I'm like, yeah, the stuff they're saying, like, I could see how music could be bad.
Right.
So then I start to think, what if it's all a design for me to make alternative music for people who like music, but also are trying to, you know, not indulge in destructive things. So it's like, I started on that journey and found a producer who makes vocals only music.
Right.
Reached out to him on Instagram. I was like, is it okay if I use your music? I'll pay you or whatever you need. He said, I don't need any money. We doing this for God. Like he said, it would be wrong for me to ask you for money. And that beat, or that man, was the one who made the beat. So then I'm okay. Now I have beats. So then that like bridged the gap of like what probably was preventing us from collabing before was I was uncomfortable about getting on a beat. Otherwise, I would have been hopped on a beat and tore some up with you. I was like, man, how could we come up with something where everything lines up?
Right.
And it only came if I had a beat. And once I finally got my beats, that was that. And then like, then it was just a matter of, you know, let me find the right sound for this topic. So the topic is God's closer to me than my jugular vein. You know, what type of emotion am I trying to invoke? And I was trying to invoke uplifting and a sense of security. So I went with something light, upbeat, positive, because the actual tone of the Quran, this verse, is scary.
Right. I was going to say.
It's not like a comforting verse actually, in the context, because it's saying like, it first talks about people who denied God and was pretty much like punished for it, like wiped out.
Right.
And then it, God is pretty much like, he's saying like, we know you. We know everything you're doing. And in the verse right after this one, it says, we have two recording angels to the left and the right of you. And that like, that gives, this is kind of a tangent, but that gives like an idea of like a, it gives a mental image. Mm. Imagine at all times you have two people on the side of you recording. Mm. I'm saying angels, but like in, even in the Quran, Allah says if he sent angels, they would come in the form of people. And when people, when angels come, they come in the form of people. So imagine two human beings always right next to you with phones, flash on, record button on. You know it. Always, right. Always recording you.
Yeah.
Waiting for you to say something, do something. And whenever you say something or do something, they write it down. That is terrifying. And like, it's a good fear though.
Right.
Because it'll make you act right.
Right.
And you notice people are less likely to run red lights when there's cameras on it and there's a cop around.
Yep.
If somebody comes to a red light, there's cops in front, behind, and cameras everywhere. They're not running that red light.
Right.
Because they know the consequences right there.
Right.
But if there's no one around, they might run that red light because the consequences are in their face. So like when God puts these mental images of judgment day and consequence on us, it forces us to take accountability. I think that's what creates this song, is an artist trying to decide, I want to take accountability. And I kind of went out of my comfort zone. I'm gonna make a song I could feel accountable for. Not a song where they're gonna be like, oh, he puts words together amazingly, or oh, this sounds so like soothing to my ear.
Right.
It's like, let me make something where I'm not gonna regret it, what I'm saying. And that was the creative challenge for me with this. And that's what inspires the track more than anything, is accountability and trying to do the right thing. That's why I keep going back to, it seems like it's off tangent, but it's still related to the track, because that's what could get me to make a song where I feel like it might not get the party jumping. It might not get, you know, battle rappers to be like, oh, he's in his bag. It might not get girls. It might not get none of that.
Right.
But it's something at the end of, like, when my heart stops beating, it's time to enter my grave. And God is like, oh, I heard you was making music down there. Show me it. I have at least one song I could show him. At least one song. So it goes back. It's ironic. Like I said earlier, I was doing all this to get a catalog and a massive amount of songs. But at the end of it all, I really only have one song I'm proud of.
Wow, man. Well, it's so powerful though. And I think, I love everything you said. And I think just bringing it back to the conversation before, where you were talking about, you know, that us as humans are this like ever evolving creation of God. And then our art, you know, is this kind of like snapshot in time that it's like, okay, I make this thing. And then it's like, that's it. And like you said, there's the process of making it where we're transforming through that process. And then there's the product of like, okay, this is created. And I think in our society, there's such an emphasis on the product, and way less on the process, to where like, you know, at the end of the day, like you sitting there and writing with that pen and never showing a soul, so many people, you know, would argue that, oh, that's worthless unless it reaches the ears of people. But from a spiritual perspective, it's like, no, actually that is so valuable to God, because God was there the whole time watching you grow and guiding you along the way. And that's where the true value is. And being able to remember that is so critical, where that might be more valuable than a song that gets a billion streams that actually doesn't, you know, elevate the human spirit and degrades it. That may be completely worthless in the sight of God. And so I think having the spiritual lens to be able to like navigate the process is so important. But then also, yeah, like that God is the most merciful, the most forgiving. And literally you could have made a billion tracks that were degrading and then reach consciousness and make one verse that was uplifting. And if you go to God for forgiveness, he would wipe clean those billion because you've come to that, you've come to him to, you know, ask for forgiveness, and you've shown that you can progress. So I think that's just also just something to be so grateful to God for. But at the same time, I think I'm also really, because as you were sharing that, I hadn't really thought of it in those terms, the way you kind of laid it out earlier, I thought was really helpful. And it made me feel really grateful that I remember before I even started writing music, like in terms of wanting to make music that I could release to people or share publicly, I had gone through this mission statement training where it was about writing a personal mission statement. And that just, I found that to be a really transformative exercise, because it was about, like, essentially, like you were saying, like really reflecting on those big questions. Why am I here? Why do I exist? And obviously we have like the broader, like, why do I exist? Which I think personally religion helps us answer. But then there's also every individual has their specific purpose within the context of the broader purpose of, like, we're here to worship God. We're here to, you know, contribute to the betterment of the world. But then each individual, God gives, you know, all these unique talents and gems, and we don't know what they are. God does from the very beginning. And I don't want to go off on too much of a tangent. I was just watching this documentary on like genetic engineering and how, like, literally within our DNA coding, there's so much that we know. We're starting to actually, you know, learn some of these things that God knows all. And we're starting to be able to be like, I actually know that this child is going to be creatively inclined because of this letter on their genetic, you know, their DNA coding, which apparently would be like a million pages long of like 6,000 letters per page is like our genetic coding. Anyway, that's another conversation, but I just think it's interesting that God knows everything about us, but it's not until for us, at least currently, not until we experience things that we realize, oh my gosh, I'm really talented at this, or I really have a passion for this. And then once we make those discoveries, we can then start, you know, cultivating them and hopefully using them for a higher purpose. But I'm just really grateful that before I started really making music, I made a mission statement for myself as an artist. And my mission was to uplift, educate, and inspire, with socially and spiritually conscious hip hop. That was my like stated mission. And so that's been really helpful to me because it's like, it grounds anything I create in that. And I'm like, okay, is what I'm making doing that? Is it uplifting, educating, or inspiring? And if yes, then great. Then like, I can be proud of, and I can always be proud of that. Like, there might be times where, oh, you know, maybe that wasn't the best way to word it or whatever, but like ultimately the spirit of it, I can be proud of. And if it doesn't accomplish that aim, it helps me like second guess myself, like, you know what, this might sound cool, but is this really uplifting? Is this really inspiring? And I think, yeah, in terms of, you know, hip hop in particular and hip hop culture with, you know, other personal values, like finding that blend where, okay, because at the same time, if you're making stuff that doesn't blend well with the culture of the, or the genre that you're trying to make music to, it's going to get rejected, you know, by a lot of people. Cause they're like, whoa, you're whack. Like you're not aligning yourself. So I think it's such a challenge to figure out how do I stay true to myself and to this higher purpose that I want to espouse to, while also delivering it in a way that is accessible to people, that gets them thinking, oh, this is cool. This does fit in. And I think that there is a lot of overlap there, like you were saying.
Cause we're playing two roles. Like, cause like as someone who's like a preacher, right, they don't have to worry about conforming to all like art.
Right. Art.
But we're artists.
Right. Exactly.
Like literally, like, you take away like what we're trying to do, at the end of the day, it's art still.
Yep.
You know, so like there's some people who just want the art.
Right.
And the goal is like, if you could get it to where you could get someone who's not interested in spirituality to like the art.
Right.
Then you've hit both.
Yeah.
If you could get someone who's like Kanye is kind of doing it, like people who are Kanye fans that aren't into Christianity, but they're listening to Kanye. Mm. And
it's cool to have those people.
Yeah. His art is getting people into what he's into.
Right.
And it's kind of like, everyone's always doing that, you know?
Right.
Cause like I said earlier, the passage of information, that goes back to what you said about like DNA. So God literally created information. Mm. That's what we are. We're a big conglomerate of information.
Right.
And like the DNA is information, and in society, the nurture is information, like nature and nurture.
Mm.
So that's what we're doing. We're passing on when we rap. we're passing on stuff that's in our head to other people's heads. Right. Telepathy.
Right. Yeah, seriously. And art is such, I think that's the thing about it. Like, just also to kind of unpack what you're sharing. I know you're sharing how in Islam there's, I think it's in the hadiths about music, and, or is it actually in the Quran? I'm not sure. Yeah,
it's in the hadith. That's why it's a difference of opinion. Cause like, okay. The Quran doesn't explicitly mention music at all.
Okay. Got it. Okay. Cause I remember, yeah, we had talked about that in terms of, yeah, you know, making music unlawful or instruments in particular. But then in the Baha'i writings, it's interesting because Baha'u'llah also refers to that. And I think it's referring to probably the hadith, because, you know, Baha'u'llah came in an Islamic context and basically said that, you know, we have made music lawful. However, and I'm paraphrasing here, but essentially be careful because it's a ladder for the soul. It can either take you up or down, essentially. So making sure that if you're going to make music, be very cautious that it's not the type of music that's going to bring you down, which so often it is, even though it sounds dope and you're getting in with it, it's actually degrading your, you know, your spirit. So I think, you know, making sure that it's uplifting and elevating in nature, but it, because music has that power, like more so than just regular discourse or regular conversation, music takes you to a different place that has a different draw. And it unlocks, you know, something different, which is really what, you know, draws me into it. But yeah, so with that, I did want to get into, you know, we've been talking about how it's received and reaching different audiences. How, from your perspective, like with your fan base, your audience, how has the song been received? Have you had any type of, you know, comments, messages, any feedback on it that's been, you know, worth mentioning?
Well, I looked at my, like my Spotify the other day, and it was one of my most played tracks. Mm. And, but I haven't really got much feedback on this particular track. Mm. I think I need to do a better job pushing it out. Mm. Give it its proper marketing run. Mm. Maybe give it a video. I've noticed that that's like the barrier, because I put out like 7-8 mixtapes. Mm. Randomly, quietly. Mm. But since I'm not like, I don't really push it or like promote it or have videos for it, a lot of it doesn't get, you know, noticed.
Right.
So like, I feel like this song still has yet to, even though like it does have quite a few listens already, it's yet to really be pushed. Mm. To like put out to the world like that. So I feel like it hasn't really even got the reaction that it would get yet. Mm. Mm. I think this podcast will help expose people to the song. Mm. But yeah, like I'm looking forward to hearing some feedback to it, because it's one of the more vulnerable tracks, because it is more closer to the heart.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and like you were mentioning, what about earlier, yeah, no, it's pretty much been all positive. All the feedback I've gotten in terms of just enjoying the collaboration. You know, people have mentioned, I think the fact that, you know, you and I are, obviously we're both very spiritual people, and we, I would say, view things very similarly for the most part, but obviously we do come from different faith backgrounds, me being a Baha'i and you being a Muslim. And I think that's something that's actually really powerful in today's world. And I, you know, a lot of people commented on that, like, well, that's so cool, you know, that you have this like interfaith, collaboration going on, and, you know, finding the common ground, which there, again, like I said, there's so much of it. But for whatever reason in today's world, I think, you know, a lot of people kind of like to be siloed off in their whatever it is, whether it's religion or political or race or whatever. People kind of just like to, you know, this is my group and I don't want to associate with that other group, even though, like, you know, DNA, yeah, going back to DNA, it's like we're 99.99% the exact same. And it's just these little differences, yeah, that give us diversity, but the diversity is beautiful. You know, when we,
yeah, I was just about to say, like, maybe if I did a song with my Christian homie, I did a song with my Christian homie. That's controversial. Baha'i, y'all like our cousins. Like, if you think, right, about like if we get down to the technical, like a Sunni scholar would say Baha'i is a deviant sect, mm-hmm, like it's a deviation from Islam. Mm-hmm. But if you go down to the core of what Islam is, which is just accepting that the Quran is from God,
right,
I think y'all do that. So that, mm-hmm, would technically make you Muslim. Mm. I was looking at like a bunch of, like, I'm really into comparative religion, because, mm, it's like there's so many of them, and I like wonder, like, you know, which one is right and which one is which, and, you know, da 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 da.
Right.
And I got it down to, I think we got a bunch of like different like divisions, mm, but it's really either you follow the Bible, the Quran, the Dharma, nothing, mm, or your community. I know it's every religion, like a lot of smaller ones, they're just following their community. A lot of stuff, like there's like a lot of, there's like the Kemetic sciences, there's the Nation of Islam, there's the Shia. There's like so many people who go off the Quran that wouldn't be considered Muslim, because it's Sunni Muslim, which is what Islam is, you know, known as. And that happens to be the biggest religious sect. But then if you combine all the sects, Christianity is bigger. Right. So it becomes really like tricky. How do you define religion, and like, how do you define what it, where is different?
Right.
You know, cause like
big question.
I broke it down to five, right?
Right.
I split up the Bible and the Quran and the Dharma and then secular and community. Mm-hmm. But even then, like, you combine the Bible and the Quran as the same God, the creator of the heavens and the earth. And then you look in the Dharma, they're talking about the same being.
Right.
But the Bible and the Quran has similar attributes of the same being.
Right.
It's like, it gets real tricky, like how to like divide and stuff like that.
It gets tricky, but I think at the end of the day, the beautiful thing to me is that, you know, at least from my understanding, that all of these scriptures essentially, you know, we're being commanded to reach out and be friendly with those that are friendly with us. And ultimately for me, just my personal belief is God wants us to befriend each other and understand each other. And we have so much to learn from each other. And ultimately God is the one that has the full knowledge, the full truth, and we'll have to stand before him with our effort to, you know, figure out what was true and then do our best to live by it. And so I felt like this creation and this process was a testament to that particular, you know, principle. So I was really honored. And it has me excited to, you know, hopefully do more collaborations, yeah, you know. So we're running kind of short on time here. So maybe we can finish off with real quick, because you kind of mentioned, you know, and obviously with music in today's world, especially for independent artists, a song's origin can start and end wherever, you know what I mean? Just because it was released on one day doesn't mean it can't reach a big audience, you know, 10 years down the line or whatever. So what do you hope for, particularly the listeners now that have kind of heard the song, and we've only got a minute left, so you got to be fast. What do you hope the listeners get out of it? And then finally, where can listeners kind of get in touch with you, follow you, if they'd like to kind of connect and share any feedback with you?
Okay. If you want to get in contact with me, at Khalil the Griot on Instagram, KHALILTHEGRIOT. You want to see my art is Khalil the Goat on all platforms and on YouTube. And what I want people to take away from this song is that God is close to you, and he's very intimate, and he cares about you, and he's not far off. And if you do a good deed, it will come back. That's all he wants. It's like like a bank, like do a loan, do a little charity, a little good deed. And then in the future, it'll come back to either save you from something bad happening or make something good happen. And that's it.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much. We could go on, like I said, for hours, but we'll stop it there. Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in. Thank you, Khalil, for joining me and for just dropping so much knowledge. As always, got my brain activated. I know today's going to be a good day. Right? That's how our conversations go. So, thank you, everyone, for listening. Hope you have a wonderful day. Hope you found this elevated and insightful. And we will see you all on the next episode.